hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
4 o'clock hour, Cofield & Company, you heard it. The eyes of sight. Alex White is with us. Mateo's helping out with the setup. Well, he's doing the setup. He's not helping out. I didn't do it. Back in studio is Griffin. So we got an announcement today. We had heard rumors about this a while ago. Yeah, everyone loves Vegas. The Big Ten is going to have their football media days in Vegas in July. I'm happy about that. You know, I'm a lifelong Big Tenner. I went to Rutgers, so lifelong, sure. So I have some interest on that front, and you know, it's one of the best conferences in the country. One update, I don't know if you saw this, Dusty May has signed an extension on the basketball side with Michigan, so I want to get to that. Adam Rittenberg is with us. He is a Big Ten insider with Alex and Cofield. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, and yeah, you can't think of the Big Ten without thinking of Rutgers, so I appreciate the connection there.
Of course. The passion, the tradition. Okay, let's get into, first of all, I wonder if there are people in Big Ten territory who are like, why are you going to Vegas? Why are they coming to Vegas?
Yeah, so you know, part of this, from my understanding, is it was an availability issue in Indianapolis, where the Big Ten traditionally has done its football media day. They've used the stadium at Lucas Oil for the last few years. It's been a good event. You know, this used to be always in a hotel, you know, usually in Chicago, and it really, since it's moved to Indianapolis and Lucas Oil Stadium, I think it's become a much cooler and more efficient event. But I think there, you know, from my understanding, there was an availability issue there, and it became harder to figure out an alternative. I think they looked at the Motor Speedway even and some other sites, but then decided to shift to Las Vegas, where obviously a number of leagues have had their media days. Big 12 last year, Mountain West had their media day, has had their media day there for a number of years. And so, you know, it's a place that is obviously very good at putting on events. Plenty of hotels, plenty of restaurants. This one wanted to be at a hotel rather than at Allegiant Stadium like the Big 12 one was last year. But Vegas, in spite of the weather, it does make a lot of sense for a July event before the season.
Yeah, I'm sure the convention people made a good deal, too, maybe pitching a little money at the Big Ten or LVCVA, who are in charge of bringing events here. And I think the other positive is, you know, why not do a solid for USC and UCLA and Oregon and Washington, where it's kind of close to their region, especially L.A., because certainly on the basketball side, we've seen some of the basketball coaches complaining about all the travel that the football people agreed to.
Right. And, you know, the Big Ten has moved around, you know, some of its events. The basketball tournament has gone to Washington, D.C., and to and New York. There's been some initial discussions, although nothing's on the books, about possibly a football championship game at the Rose Bowl one year. And so, again, if you're going to build yourself as a national conference, I think it is important at times, even though a lot of fans maybe don't like it, to move the major events around, including football media day. So I don't think this will be a permanent site by any means. I would fully expect this event to be much closer to where I am in the Midwest. In 2026, but as a one-off, let's see how it goes, and certainly Vegas is a great place to at least experiment.
Let's talk a little football and basketball. First, on the football side, in general, what do you make of the latest meetings with Big Ten and SEC officials and what they could do to the CFP, how much control they can have, and how soon it can happen?
Right. Well, it's still a little surreal for me as someone who's covered the Big Ten for a long time to see these two leagues, you know, so closely aligned and having meetings and partnering and collaborating. I mean, we all know that they're the two most powerful leagues in the sport, but just to see this, you know, very, very obvious partnership grow is still a little striking, because they really were rivals for many years, not just on the field, but as conference offices. And, you know, I think, again, that they are quite aligned on obviously trying to, you know, position their teams for the most access in the future. And, you know, having more than just the automatic berth for the conference champion. And, you know, they have incredible influence because of the money and because of the brands that are in those two leagues. And going forward, you don't need unanimous approval for changes to the college football playoff process. So not to say that the entire system will be dragged around by the wishes of the Big Ten and the SEC, but you're naive if you think that really what those leagues want is going to be mostly what the things that they get because of how much money and how much influence is tied up. So it's going to be interesting to see how those meetings translate to the larger playoff meetings happening later this month and whether, you know, you see changes that take place for the 2025 season, including possibly getting rid of the seeding, or if we just have one more year of a system like we saw in 2024, and then most likely significant changes, including the overall number of teams in the playoff beginning in 2026.
And with that, Adam, Big Ten and SEC are going to propose the idea of having four guaranteed from their conferences, right? And if that is the case, do you think they will get the majority vote on that, and do you agree with it?
Well, I think in the end they probably will. There will be negotiation, and we'll see if there's any wiggle room there. But you saw this year the Big Ten had four teams in the playoff, and the SEC had three teams. And I do believe that in most years that would be the case, but they're obviously angling for automatic access. And we'll see what that means for the ACC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the Mountain West and the other Group of Five leagues. So, but again, this is something that, you know, especially a guy like Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, who comes from Major League Baseball, who doesn't have a lot of, you know, sentimental ties to what it used to be like in college football. He comes from a pro sport where there's obviously a number of guaranteed spots for the postseason. And I think, you know, he and Greg Sankey, who are lobbying for as much access as possible. And I think because of the influence of those leagues, they're probably going to get most or all of what they want.
Big Ten Football Media Day is going to be here in July in Las Vegas, July 22nd through the 24th. Adam Rittenberg is a Big Ten expert for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. A couple of basketball points. Is it true that Dusty May did sign an extension? I didn't see any money details, but obviously that's intriguing, one, because he's been amazingly successful, but Indiana may make a run at him. So deal, and I guess Indiana's out, right, on Dusty May?
Yeah, and again, I don't think this is going to be the likely outcome anyway for Dusty to make a move so soon after coming to Michigan. Michigan is obviously a great place to coach, and they put a lot of money into him and into that program already. They were able to be very successful in the transfer portal, bringing in some of his guys from Florida Atlantic and from other places. And you know, they're playing Michigan State tonight, and obviously a huge game. So what a great time for Michigan to, you kind of finalize at least the parameters for this agreement to keep Dusty May. And you know, you have leverage if you're a successful coach from a university that has a coaching vacancy, and that's the case right now because of Indiana. But you know, I think Michigan, because they have obviously great resources and they're set up to continue to win, was aggressive here, and they have you know, secured him at least for the immediate future as their head coach.
So interesting. By the way, I'm sure you never expected to get called from ESPN Las Vegas, like, hey, let's talk all the hardcore Big Ten issues, but I'm into it. And they really are national stories that have ties, believe it or not. Like, the IU job has ties to UNLV, because I think some of the top candidates may be two-week-long former UNLV head coach Chris Beard, former UNLV coach T.J. Altzelberger, Mick Cronin, who used UNLV to get more money at Cincinnati. That kind of the group, or do you expect them to shoot a little lower? And that's not an insult. I do think there's a harm at times to a program when they're like, let's make a shot or take a shot at, you know, eight of the biggest guys and just get rejected by all eight.
Right. Well, I mean, you saw that at Louisville this past year, and Pat Kelsey's working out pretty well. I know it's just year one, but he was not nearly their first or second choice, and it's been very, very good so far for Louisville. I mean, you know, Chris Beard is the name that it certainly seems to be up there. You know, when you have Rick Pitino lobbying for you, there's probably a reason behind that. And certainly if Indiana, you know, wants to make a splash, you know, he's at Ole Miss, which is a good job, but certainly not an A-list job in basketball. Certainly nowhere near the history that Indiana has. So I could certainly see a guy like Beard. And you know, also Berger is a coach that I really think would fit seamlessly into the Big Ten. his style of play, the emphasis on defense. He's obviously from Milwaukee, so very familiar with basketball in this part of the country. And so I think Indiana's going to, you know, end up with a pretty good choice here and shouldn't get as far down its list as, say, Louisville did last year.
It's really fascinating what they've done. I know there has to be changes now, 18 teams in the Big Ten, but three of them getting left out of the tournament here in college hoops, and we're really seeing these teams at the bottom play their heart out, trying to get a few more wins. What's your overall take from this change?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the purist of me says it's really a shame that a team can be in a conference and not play in its conference tournament. I know that's been the case elsewhere, but it hasn't been the case in the Big Ten. Everybody's in this conference has made the league tournament. And so, you know, that won't be the case for three teams. It does incentivize those teams to find ways to win here. You know, Penn State finally had a win. Northwestern had a huge win last night. They blew out Ohio State on the road, and so they're trying to get in through the tournament after making the NCAA tournament each of the last 2 years. Iowa's, you know, struggling. Rutgers is right there. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what kind of drama unfolds there at the bottom. But, you know, you have an 18-team league, and it's hard to get all those games in. And obviously 15 of them will go on to Indianapolis for what should be a really fun conference tournament in a few weeks.
All right, let's go to where we started to close. You tell me, as I mentioned, I went to Rutgers. You went to Northwestern. I'm sure you've watched both schools, Northwestern, a lot. What has ailed their program? Why have they been a little underwhelming on each side this year?
Oh, for Rutgers, you know, they're obviously really young, and they have some tremendous top-end talent, but I think with that comes inconsistency, and, you know, they went through a stretch there where it was really hard for them to find wins. I think Steve Peichel's a great coach, and they've obviously shown the ability to recruit at a really high level, and I saw Ace Bailey go off on Northwestern. Incredible performance without Dylan Harper on the floor, and they were able to win that game, you know, almost solely because of him. With Northwestern, you know, they have dealt with major injuries, you know, losing two of their three best players, and they've lost a lot of one-score games. Last night was their first road win of the season, and so, you know, they could easily be, you know, well over 500, maybe a chance to get back to the tournament, but without, you know, without Brooks Barnheiser, without Jalen Leach, it's going to be hard for them to do much of anything here down the stretch, even though Nick Martinelli's been terrific. So, yeah, I think two schools that, you know, just, you know, the margin for error there is pretty slim, even when you have some great talent like Ace Bailey, a Dylan Harper, a Nick Martinelli, a Brooks Barnheiser. You still need the depth and the bounces to go your way, and it hasn't happened consistently enough for either team this year.
Adam, we appreciate you giving us some time before the weekend, and I hope we'll see you here in a few months in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I've never touched the surface of the sun, and then I went to Big 12 Media Days last year, so looking forward to being back this July.
It's a dry heat. It's a dry heat. Cut it out.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Adam Rittenberg. He would not come back on that. He's like, it's a living hell. It is amazing when people complain. We are so used to it.
Oh, yeah.
It does not bother me.
I prefer the dry heat over humidity.
Yeah, let me tell you, if we had one more conversation on this show or with West Coast people about going to New Orleans and the humidity, I'm like, because I didn't think it was that bad. But I get it. I haven't stepped in the state of Florida in, I don't know how many years, 10 years. But there have been times I've gone down there now as a Las Vegan, and I'm like, what is going on? My body's leaking and it won't stop.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yeah, obviously it means a lot to our group. You know, I think a lot of people were wondering if, you know, what this tournament would mean to guys, and obviously you can see what it means to everyone on our side. It was, really exciting.
Big deal for Canada. It was a big deal for USA, but DJT, not DJ Thomas, Trump, got them all fired up. That's why they won. No, they're very good. We'll get back to some of the hockey, the numbers and the ratings. Kind of interesting. Alex is here. It's Cofield. Matt Nevert's on the horn. UNLV baseball, home opener. Football schedule came out a couple days ago. We'll get to that. And also some stuff with the umpires around Major League Baseball and the minors. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing well, Cofield. Happy to be on with you. Happy to get ready for another season of Rebel baseball. A home opener against top 25 Cincinnati tonight. Rebels come in 2-2 with two wins over number 20, then number 25 Indiana. So, yeah, a lot of hype and a lot of good baseball here early on in the season.
So tell me what came out of the 2-2 start, because the losses were pretty lopsided. Oregon State is awesome. Does that say something about the pitching staff, the depth, anything we can read early about the 2-2 start?
I mean, it's going to be a little bit different when it comes to the offensive makeup of this team. In years past, if anyone that's followed the Mountain West as a conference in baseball knows, a lot of bombers, a lot of high-altitude, high-wind environments. So they're usually pretty elevated offensive numbers around the conference when it comes to the power statistics. But for UNLV this year, we're going to see a little bit different. We're going to see some bunts. We're going to see a lot more base stealing, a little bit more aggressiveness on the base pass. They've got a well-balanced lineup, I would say more so than in years in the past. Two wins in the four-day stretch over Indiana. They opened and closed the MTE, so to speak, against Indiana, who was number 25 in the country. It was a couple of big wins, a couple of big hits. Dean Toigo, the new right fielder, had a go-ahead grand slam along with J.P. Heft in those two games. The matchup against Oregon State, really not one to take a lot of stock in. Oregon State is the number 7 team in the country when they played and is likely going to be within the top 5 when the newest rankings are released next week. But that's a team with, I believe the number was 8 pitchers in their 4 games that they played that threw 95-plus miles per hour, which is unheard of on one single college staff nowadays. And then the game against Xavier was a letdown spot. Coaching staff said as much because it came the day after the Oregon State game. And, you know, there may have been some element of shell shock there, but really dropping a game that head coach Dan Stolpe told me they should not have dropped. So they do want to go up against another team based in Cincinnati tonight, the Bearcats, and try to get back up over 500. It certainly is a team that has the tools. The big question is it, as it is with any team in the Mountain West, is do they have the arms to last throughout the season? Really only time will tell.
Matt Nevert is with us. Pretty aggressive schedule, too, as they'll have another home series next week against Milwaukee, and then they're at Arizona State, at St. Mary's, at Utah Tech. I just want to ask you in general, what does the Mountain West look like now? I know they were projected, I think, fourth in the conference. What does it look like now in terms of winning the conference, putting together a quality schedule, and trying to make the tournament?
Well, and with the way that the conference is nowadays, it really is a one-bid league, barring anything crazy that happens throughout, I would say more so the non-con slate than the conference part of the schedule. So you're looking to really be the top dog. You know, second, third place, like in basketball in the Mountain West, is not always going to get you into that tournament, especially with more teams that do get into that tournament. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, San Diego State's been down for the last couple of years. They've been really, really young as well with the new coaching staff. So they're going to be better by default this year. Air Force playing at the elevation that they do, always a very, very good offensive team, and they're able to, with, you know, the Service Academy requirements, keep these guys for 4 years once they're there. We saw Paul Skeens get out just in the nick of time when it comes to that. And then you got teams like New Mexico, who's always really tough, Fresno State, who's a perennial blue blood when it comes to the Mountain West Conference. Every now and then, Reno will put together a really good season, more so on the offensive side as well. So it is limited with just 7 teams in the conference, especially, you know, Wyoming, Colorado State, Utah State. Those schools do not have Division I baseball. So it's a smaller Mountain West conference than we're used to talking about. You got to keep that in mind when we're thinking about baseball in the MWC. It's going to be best of 7 when it comes to the teams, not necessarily a series. You've got to win a Mountain West tournament this year to make it to the NCAA.
Matt Nevert, voice of Rebel Baseball and Football and Basketball, the 2024 Nevada Broadcaster of the Year, is up on Cofield and Company. Before we get to some baseball in general here, I know we talked briefly off the air about what was going on with Tech, with umping in AAA. There's now talk about spring training, automated ball strike challenge system. What do you know about this? And how soon, because it still sounds like there's pushback from the umps, how soon could this actually be a reality across baseball?
Definitely, like you had mentioned, very familiar with it. For the last 2.5 seasons, on and off, we've been using it over at the ballpark in Summerlin with the Aviators. So I've definitely seen it in some different iterations and kind of the development from the start of it until where we are now with the ABS, the automatic ball strike system. It is something that I think is going to be pushed through into Major League Baseball. I would guess within the next 2 years at the absolute most. I could see a push for it in every spring training game next year. The only reason why some of the stadiums aren't using it this year is because they don't have a system called Hawkeye installed yet, which is what the actual system itself uses. It's a series of cameras connected to a computer, and that's what they actually use to, you know, define the strike zone and, you know, basically put the box more so, more or less, like you would see on ESPN. I think I'm a fan of it in a certain way. I think that they've been, you know, kind of experimenting with it in different levels at different ballparks and different venues. So it's going to be interesting to see as well whether they go with three challenges per game for each team like they've done here in the Pacific Coast League for the last couple of years, or if they go down to two, which is what they did in the International League for the last couple of years, what they're doing now for Major League Spring Training. So each team gets two challenges per game. If you get a challenge right, you keep it. So theoretically, you could have unlimited challenges if you have a really good eye. Like I said, I'm a fan of it. I think the players are a fan of it as well. It's also more or less... it is a percentage of your height that defines the top and the bottom of the zone. That's one thing that people don't necessarily realize. I think the number is like 22% and 55% of your height is the bottom and the top of the zone. So that's kind of how that's defined. And the players like it because the other option is go full ABS, just having the computer more or less call balls and strikes. And at that point, the umpire is more or less relaying signals that they hear in their ear. I don't think anybody is a fan of that as much. I think we're going to see it here in the next couple of years in Major League Baseball regular season games. I think mostly because I have it on good authority that Rob Manfred himself is a huge fan of it, loved seeing it in the Florida State League a couple years ago, and bumped it up to AAA like within a couple of weeks. It was crazy to see how fast they were able to install it, both in Las Vegas and Charlotte initially, and then now everywhere around AAA and even in AA in some parts.
Matt, I'm with you. Definitely a fan of the ABS system. As you mentioned, we've seen it for 2 years now in AAA, and not that this is a huge component that they're taking into consideration. They obviously care about the players and coaches, but wouldn't you say from a fan standpoint that it made the games really interesting? I mean, the fans were into it when they did challenge and loved to see it on the video board and how the results turned out.
Oh, very much so. It adds that extra layer of drama, adds that layer of intrigue, and it's always funny to see certain guys I've heard have gotten, you know, you hear about the green light, the red light. Hey, you're bad at it. No more challenges for you. And we've seen some of those guys at the minor league level. And I think everybody does a good job if you are using that ABS system and the challenge system as well. Most teams will have a video that they'll show, whether it's provided by Major League Baseball or made themselves, like, hey, just so you know, here's what you're going to see, here's what it means, and here's how it affects the games. I think educating fans is going to be a big part of getting the public behind it. I think that that's going to happen because Major League Baseball already has put so much time, energy, and resources into this, and it's coming to Major League Baseball. That's a fact. I talked to a lot of people around Major League Baseball. Whether or not they like it, they know that it's coming soon.
Matt Everett's with us. I'll ask both of you guys, first Matt, then Alex. So the system was used. How many times at the home games did you see managers coming out to argue balls and strikes, pitchers getting pissed off, players? Did it happen?
Not as much because there's nothing to argue. We've seen it in the full ABS games where it's not a challenge, where it's just the umpire relaying the ball strike signal that he gets in his ear. A, for as a manager, what are you going to argue? The umpire's not the one making the call. And B, there is a rule where you get automatically ejected. Like, you're supposed to get tossed for arguing balls and strikes. That's a fact. That's just a rule that's in the rule book. It's enforced selectively. Certain umpires have relationships with certain managers and coaches, so they don't always, you know, eject you at the first sign of an argument. But it is hard and fast. If you argue after the ABS is overturned or confirmed a call, you're gone as a manager.
Yeah, no. We never really saw it the last few years. Yeah.
I knew that was going to be the answer. I just wanted it to be verbalized. Like, yeah, the arguments will be gone, wasting freaking time, and balls and strikes will be more accurate. I forget. I was watching some postseason game with Levon Hernandez, and they were I forget who the umpire was, but it was just unbelievable, the outside zone that were getting strikes, and it was just awful. Got to clean it up. You know, part of that is, I'm not going to say ruining the game, but the other part of this is betting and integrity, and you can't have umps who are arrogant jackasses making terrible calls. Last minute here, not even 45 seconds. Was there anything for you, Matt, on the UNLV football schedule that stood out? I know some people pointed to, especially local Las Vegans, the Hawaii game at home in the same zone as F1 here in Vegas. Hello.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'm already thinking about the traffic that we're going to be sitting in coming home from that one. It's a schedule that I think benefits UNLV greatly. I think they're going to be able to take advantage of some of the non-conference games. That game against UCLA at Allegiant Stadium, I think, is going to be packed, and I think if UNLV is able to pull it out, I think that's going to be a really impactful win come strength of schedule and just public sentiment. And then in the conference slate, they avoided some of the really tough ones, especially with the games that they got at home. You don't got to go to Air Force. If you do have to go to you do have to go to Wyoming and Colorado State, but those are early enough where the weather's not going to be a factor. I think it's a very beneficial schedule for UNLV, especially in the Mountain West.
I agree. Matt, appreciate it. I know you're like less than an hour or so here from first pitch, so enjoy it, and hopefully it's a good season.
Sounds good. I appreciate you, Cofield. I'll see you tomorrow night at the Thomas and Mack.
There he is, Matt Neverett. I don't know that guy.
He never sleeps.
You gave me an eyebrow raise on the F1 Hawaii UNLV football game. Hello. I was already thinking about routes. I actually, you know what's funny? I was down kind of far, for me, further south on the 15, and I drove up past the stadium. I'm like, I want to see what they've done with Tropp and Dean Martin, and I got lost and had to turn around and make an illegal turn, but the cops didn't hear that. Ignore that part of the show.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Sports Reno.
Halfway point of the show, Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Come on down, 24/7 kiosk with the betting. 55-plus TVs to check out the games. We've got NBA on right now. Little college basketball with Villanova and Marquette. I was thinking last night, who could be the next Villanova coach? Because I don't know if Kyle Neptune's going to make it. Right now they're leading by 16 against a really good Marquette team, so this helps their cause. We'll see. We're going to talk to Jared Calhoun in the 5 o'clock hour. I'm not saying the Utah State coach is going to leave after a year, but that has happened. If he can do this, you know, 2-3 years, he's going to be a hot candidate for the jump up. But we're going to talk Mountain West Conference Tournament with Jared Calhoun in just a couple minutes. Chef Mark is up in less than 10 minutes. Alex White, Cofield, Mateo here at the Golden Circle. I, for a second, made the mistake of talking about traffic and roads here. For a second. I was telling you they've got some rerouting and the construction still underway at the Dropicana, which is very much more involves a bridge and the Tropp and 15 interchange, because there's going to be some other rerouting of Dean Martin. And I drove it the other night, and I was like, I don't know where the hell I am.
I don't think I've been that way.
Be careful when you go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The signage is not great. Like, today I went the wrong way. I wasn't, like, on a wrong-way driver, but I went the wrong way.
So. That could be scary for some people.
Just not where I was intending to go. It wasn't anything illegal, but you know, you did notice, I don't know if you saw this, this has now become a Vegas standard. We'll start this way. That road project went up by about 15%. I think it was supposed to be done around $305 million. I think it got boosted to $355. And I saw one of the local content creators was like, hey, can we get a breakdown of the extra $50 million? I was like, no answer three times. I'm sure we can get it. You got to do a little digging. But in a lot of ways, it's similar. I don't know that we'll ever find out why the A's ballpark has gone from what we thought to be $1.5 billion to $1.75.
Right.
And it probably doesn't stop there.
Still in that same spot?
For now.
For now.
I mean, they cleared all the land.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, nothing's really been done on the land. A parking report came out. I think the percentage of seats needed to be somewhere in the 20%, 22% range. But basically, it'd be 25. A parking spot for every four seats. So it's slated to be about 30 or 31,000. So do the math. We're talking about 7,000, 7,500 tickets. And the report that was out the other day, they will have 2,400 parking spots, 2,400 parking spots. 7,000 is what they need. They will have 2,400 well, 7,000 required, 2,400 on property. Well, because you know what they're going to argue, that the garages around are there's plenty of parking right there, which there is, but then you wonder, is that going to be affordable? Because the Raiders parking, is they can get you for an arm and a leg. Now, it's dropped, and a lot of the other lots they couldn't buy. I think I've seen a big drop-off in any kind of business, so when I'm down there, it has dropped, but it's still not a great price. What's going to happen with baseball when if they actually can get 30,000? Those garages are convenient. I just wonder if we're going to start paying $100 a night to park, and then I think they better be really careful with locals.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate because I mean the T-Mobile actually there is enough parking.
Right, and they build more.
Right?
But Excalibur, if you go further down the Excalibur behind it, they have a giant garage there that holds a lot of cars.
But even for the Aces games, there's not enough for Mandalay Bay, and you have to go to the Luxor and other places around
Mandalay's
there.
Mandalay's crazy. I didn't realize for a massive game, there was one of the games was sold out last year that I went to, and I'm like, I didn't even know, does Mandalay have 73 levels? Like, I got in the garage, and I'm like, when does this end? Wait, there's a roof level? I've never been up here.
Former NFL cornerback and Next Level Chef contestant Mark McMillan joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's bring in Chef Mark. He's down in Arizona. What's up, buddy? What's up, Mark?
Hey, what's going on, Steve-O?
A whole lot. We got a busy sports weekend on the way. The Combine is less than a week away. It starts next week, so that's cool. We'll get into that to start. Remind the audience of your pre-draft experience, because you wound up playing with the Chiefs and the Eagles and the Saints, and then they were called the Redskins and the Niners. You played at Alabama, but you were undersized, as everyone knows. What was your pre-draft experience like?
Nerve-wracking, because I didn't get invited to the Senior Bowl, which is right there in Alabama. Didn't get invited to the combine. So, here I am, a 2-year starter at Alabama, and I'm thinking, like, okay, at least I'll get invited to one of the combines or All American games or whatever. But I wasn't always in good graces with Coach Stallion. So he told me, he said, I'm not going to put your name down to participate in the Senior Bowl because you don't deserve to be there because of some of your actions early on in your career. So he kind of laid down the gauntlet early for me being at Alabama because he actually suspended me my senior year going into my senior year before spring ball. So I didn't get invited to any of those events, so it kind of hurt me a little bit, but it was nerve-wracking.
Yeah, what do you think it's like now for the prospects in terms of exposure? It feels like it's at an all-time high. If you don't get invited to the Combine, there's workouts everywhere. Hell, you could probably get a lot of attention just on doing your own video. I don't think NFL teams are necessarily going to draft you off of that, but it really is crazy the kind of exposure guys at all levels get now.
It's good for these guys. Obviously, especially for smaller division guys from smaller schools, you get an opportunity to get in front of coaches. Even some kids from, say, from a lower division school, you can actually go to a D1 school combine now, which is pretty cool. That coaches allow other teams, other young men from different schools to come out and compete at their combine. So it's a great deal. Obviously, I don't put a lot of stuff in the combines, and I'm sure some of the listeners, probably look at the combine like, oh, this guy is fast, this guy is strong, he can jump out the gym, or this quarterback's hands is bigger than that quarterback's hands. I always relate it down to the film study. If you can play football, they're going to find a place for you. And speaking of football players, we look at the two young men from UNLV, Wright and Jackson, not time players as far as you talk about the school, but those guys can play football and should be on somebody's draft board.
Chef Mark is with us, former NFL player Mark McMillan. I saw an interview today about Ashton Gentry. It was actually Ashton Gentry being interviewed, and he kind of joked, hey, if I was going to go anywhere, where we're going to live, man, I'd like to go back to Texas. So Dallas is, in that range where they could take him. How good is Jenty, and how high should he go? I mean, he is a little undersized at 5'8". Would you take him with a top 20 pick?
I would take him in a heartbeat. That young man is a football player. Obviously, getting an opportunity to see him play up close and personal a couple of times in Las Vegas. Obviously, I'm a real tough critic, but I don't put in too much about a guy's size or his height. Because if you look at the guy, he's built like a truck. And, you know, he's got great balance. He's really good out of the backfield. He's able to run through the tackles. You know, he was on everybody's target, but all he did every year, every game was rush for over 100 or 150 yards. So it's hard to find running backs like that, and we just saw it this last year. Running backs kind of put themselves back in the picture that you need a running back to be effective in the NFL, especially in the playoffs and the Super Bowl.
And, Mark, this is a really good running back class. Who would be next on your radar after Jenty?
Oh, there's so many talented running backs out there. Like, I didn't get a chance to break down some of the smaller schools because some of the smaller schools have some of the best individual running backs. So it's really hard to just say, hey, this is going to be the next running back coming out of, you know, into the draft. So I don't want to put any kid's name out there, and then obviously it doesn't happen. I don't like to, you know, I don't like to put those guys out there and they listen to the show and be like, oh, my God, Mark said I was going to second round, and the kid doesn't go to, like, the fourth or fifth round. So it's a great class, but Jenty is ahead of every running back in this class, and he should be the first running back off the board.
NFL news. First, let's talk about the Raiders coaching staff as they close things out here. Any thoughts on how they finished it out? Do you know any of the dudes who got hired? Do you got connections?
Yeah, I know the DB coaches. I really know Marcus Roth, the DB coach. We actually grew up together in California. He went on, he had a scholarship out of high school to Iowa State. Obviously, I had to go to JUCO, but I've been knowing Mark Roth for a while. He played for the Titans. Been coaching the last for a while with the New Orleans Saints. A great guy, great mentor, great you know, mind on and off the field. So I'm excited for Marcus Roth, man, to get that job.
I saw on the transaction front a guy that you and I interviewed. Seems like a long time ago. Probably really wasn't. But Elijah Molden got a long-term deal with the Chargers, huh?
Yes, I talked to him today. I saw him put that out there. So I called Elijah, congratulated him. Obviously, him and his wife and their two kids, which is amazing. I talked to his dad, Alex Molden. We played together in New Orleans. So I'm just so excited for that young man. I was bummed he got hurt later in the season. But that just goes to show you what kind of player he is. He missed the last couple of games, but they still rewarded him with a three-year, I think it was like $18 million deal. So I'm so happy for the Molden family.
$13.5 million guaranteed. Did you ask him to kind of come in on the bottom floor of Chef Mark Incorporated and invest a little bit in the chefing? Come on now. He's got the money.
Hey, man. I was like, hey, I know those taxes are going to hit you hard in California, but don't forget about Uncle Mark, you know, when you come to Vegas, Mark. Man. At least you can buy me a hamburger or a slice of pizza. But it's one of the great, great, great stories, man. I've been coaching Elijah since Elijah was like 7 years old playing in some of our All-American games. And to see him get rewarded, man, it's really cool to see these kids that obviously had an opportunity to coach with through the rankings and now watch these kids on Sunday. I just get excited. I know when people see me on the field during pregame, hugging the players, but man, this is a dream for these kids, and they're living out their dream. And like I said, I don't never want any money from you guys. Just buy coach a hot dog or a slice of pizza, and we're good.
There you go. The international schedule is starting to come together for the NFL. Chargers going to be in Brazil, Jets and Browns in London, Jags in London, Colts in Berlin, Dolphins in Madrid, Steelers in Dublin. As a former player, and you talk to current players, what do you think of this in terms of the competitive integrity? You know, some teams get the international games, some don't. It's certainly not an advantage to have to go on the road and change all your travel stuff. And but I know the NFL is trying to grow the game, so there's a balance here.
Yeah, and you mentioned those teams. And none of those teams are good. It's like we're trying to grow the game, but we're not putting our best teams over there. Obviously, you had the Eagles and the Packers last year to kind of highlight it. That was some of the big name games. But some of these teams that's going overseas is like, that's not our best product. And obviously, you know, with all these games that they're adding, but it does take a toll. I know when I was playing, I think it was only one game. It was the Japan Bowl that, you know, you got selected to and you went over to Japan and played. I had an opportunity to play my rookie year. over there in Japan with the Eagles, and then I got a chance to play with the Kansas City Chiefs. But when we went over there, it was preseason. Now these guys are playing regular season games and then having to fly back home and get geared up and play a game the following weekend. It's got to be tough on these guys' body, mentally and physically. But like I said, the NFL is all about money, man, so they don't care about these guys, man. Just go over there and promote our product, and when you get back, you know, if you're okay, that's good.
What are your thoughts on Nebraska kind of snowballing this effect? Other schools following with no spring games, such as Texas and USC. So how do you feel about no spring ball for college football?
You know, hearing what happened last year from Nebraska, losing some of their players after their spring game, that's just the way that we're going. And especially with NIL in the position now, if you're a kid and you're going to your spring game and you think you have an opportunity to be a starter and you don't beat that starter out, all of a sudden, you know, there's another team, a school out there, like, hey, you can come here and start right now, and we're going to give you X amount of dollars. So I'm all on board of these games. I know it costs some of these universities a lot of money because they do make revenue off these spring games. ESPN is big about hosting these spring games on TV as well. I know Alabama, when Nick Saban was rolling, they were averaging like 80,000 fans to these spring games. So for some of these young kids, it's an opportunity, you know, to get looked at by other schools. But the big-time schools, they're like, man, we're not trying to lose our guys to any other school. So I get it. But, you know, I think it's going to hurt football as well. Because spring game, man, you know, that's something big for these kids to showcase their talents.
All right, we got to get to a recap. It's a couple weeks ago now. Taste of the NFL. Mark McMillan is with us. He was one of the celebrity chefs selected and, you know, and involved with legends of New Orleans cooking as well. We know you were doing the beignet. You had to cook for a lot of people. Give me a grade. How'd you do?
You know what, Steve? I'm going to be a little biased. From the feedback that we got, I would say we did A-plus work. There were some of the top chefs. There were some top chefs that came by and tried our product. Obviously, I don't want to say it too much, because we're trying to, you know, do something with that product because it did really well, and it's a great concept. So people are really interested in that concept that we did. But Chef Zimmer came by and loved it. The legendary Tony Dungy, Coach Dungy, came by, and he was like, I remember you playing as a player. He's like, man, your beignets taste is better than what you played on the football field. So that was a compliment from the coach. From Coach Dungy, man, which was incredible. You know, I know the McCourty twins came by. They enjoyed the product. You know, Tim Brown came by, him and his wife. They enjoyed the product. So we knocked it out the park and served over 2,000 plates.
Wow. I feel like your next level fortune could be with that product as a frozen product. Wouldn't that be cool to see? Whoever's name is on it, because I know it's not just you who came up with it, but, you know, Mighty Mac in the frozen food aisle.
Hey, you know what? That's our goal, Steve. That's something that was brought to us, and obviously Chef Daryl Shuler, who's the master chef who helped me as well. There's some businesses out there that are very well aware of what we did and what we have, so we have a couple of meetings set up you know, over the next couple of months. I just got invited to the barbecue battle that's going to be in D.C., sponsored by Giant Food, which is huge on the East Coast. So they were very interested in our product and what we put out. So we'll be pitching our concept to that. And hopefully, Steve, we can be in the frozen section aisle, man. That'll be pretty cool. So I'm manifesting it now that we will have a product on the aisle or in your freezer section maybe by the end of this year.
I was actually hoping you were going to be like, Cofield, that's a great idea. We're gonna juice you in, and then immediately they're like, "Yeah, we thought about it already. Companies have come to us.
Yeah.
They already thought about it."
But you're locked in with food with me so much, man. Like I said, I always give you a shout out, man, because you're one of the first stations, one of the first guys to get to that platform when we first started. Just, you know, talking about food, and now here we are, next level chef cooking at the Super Bowl, and here we are could possibly have a McMillan product in your frozen section aisle. How cool would that be? And then Adam ain't got to worry about cooking. He can just pop these in the oven and he can make them at home.
That's why we're doing this. We're trying to find the perfect product line so that Adam Hill never has to cook again. He can just throw it in a microwave or an oven and he'll be good to go. Hey, Mark, we're up against it, dude. Have a good time down in Phoenix, and we'll see you when you're back in town, and talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. Appreciate you guys having me on. Go Birds!